Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mike Swanson, editor of WallStreetWindow.com. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Interesting day in the market. As we're speaking, we're having a nice little up day.
What's behind this rally?
Well, if you've watched CNBC or most people on YouTube, for that matter, so-called independent media, they will tell you that we're on the cusp of a revolution in artificial intelligence, and there's new value that's going to come into the economy, and this is going to fit. Kathy Wood says this is going to fix inflation. And she's the most popular commentator right now. But I take a different view of what's really going on here. And that is that we're simply in a cyclical bull market. That's a cycle that just lasts from 2 to 5 years. And I think we had a bear market last year, and in January, we saw the internals of the market, the number of stocks going up or going down, shift to the upside. There's an explosion in buying throughout the entire stock market that was never seen in any of the rallies that all failed the previous year. Now, the problem, though, you know, investors now face is a cyclical bull market. Most of the gains come in the beginning, the first third of it. And I'm very skeptical that this is going to last for years on end, which is what I think most American traders expect, because that's what they experienced after 2008, a decades-long bull market. But I think this is more like one of the cycles that we saw in the 1970s, and we're having the inflationary type environment that was also impacting things too in the 1970s. But, you know, for now, the market is ignoring bad news. We saw it shake off the trouble in the banks as far as the averages go. But a problem with it is that the internals of the market, while they gave a powerful buy signal in the first quarter, in 2021, and we spoke about this together on your show, the internals were declining all year, which was a huge warning sign that a bear market was coming. Now, what's happening now is that the internal action, while it was great in the first quarter, now it isn't. There's only 5 stocks, for example, that are responsible for almost all the gains in the S&P 500. Those companies are Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, NVIDIA, and Apple. And NVIDIA has gone up over 150% year to date. And if you take an equal-weighted S&P 500, that's an S&P 500 index in which every single stock makes up the same, you know, amount of the index, it's only up 4.71% year-to-date, while the S&P 500 that everyone pays attention to is up much more than that. Let me give you the exact figure. It's up 15.62%, almost three times as much. That's a challenge for professional investors as far as individual investors who want to beat the market when only five stocks are driving most of the gains. Most people are not going to beat the market trying to out-trade the S&P 500 unless they try to take on exceptional risk, margin, options, or throwing all their money in a couple of stocks, which can work for a couple of months, but that you don't want to invest like that in the long run. So it's an environment that poses challenges despite the excitement of, you know, people see these averages up here to date.
In an environment like this, what should investors do?
Well, I can just say what I'm doing, and that's I don't care about these stocks. I don't care what the S&P 500 is doing this year. It's up 15% when it fell, you know, like 25% last year. What I'm doing is diversifying, and I think a big portion of my portfolio is devoted to gold, silver, and mining stocks, because while, you know, they're outperforming the market over the past 2 years, and I think they're going to continue to do that for the rest of this decade, because, as I said, I think we're in an inflationary environment, a systemic inflationary environment like the late 60s, which through the 1970s, and gold and silver are going to have their, you know, corrections and pullbacks, and, you know, bear little cycles in this too, but the overall trend is going to be, I believe, outperforming the market. And gold and silver outperformed the market from 2000 to 2011. So there was a 10-year cycle of outperformance that did lag from 2012 to really 2020, but now I think they're outperforming. So I got a lot of my money devoted to that. And right now, I've got a lot of money in short-term bonds and CDs where I know I'm guaranteed to get 5%. And I'm, you know, not really doing much trading or speculating. In fact, the next big trade I'll probably do, and it probably won't be till next year, will be taking short positions against the market when I think this cyclical bull market is over. But I don't see a sign of it ending, this summer. That's evident. The internals are not acting as well as they had been, but they're not acting as bad as they did 2 years ago in the prelude of the bear market that really started New Year's 2022. So I anticipate the internal action in the market will start to falter more significantly, and then that would be a big warning sign. You know, the bank stocks are in a horrible bear market, and that's just one sector. I think there'll be more sectors that go into bear markets, so they're on their own, but we're not at that point yet. So, you know, one reason I got more money in short-term CDs and bonds where I want to get the guaranteed 5% is that I don't really believe there is massive upside to the market averages from here. You know, I think we had the bulk of the rally, and at some point it's going to go sideways, probably for months on end, and maybe have another upward thrust. But, you know, say it went up 10% from here, I don't really care, you know, about trying to make an extra 5%, because you got to take a risk to do that. In short, you know, the time to buy was earlier this year, and I'm kind of taking a break. I told people to do buying back then. I even told people to buy NVIDIA, but I also told people to buy European markets and I'm not telling people to buy anything now. I just, you know, unless you want to buy gold and silver, because they're not going to the moon, and I think they'll go up when we get to the point that the Fed does actually lower interest rates, but that probably won't be, you know, a year from now. But that'll be the beneficiary when that happens, when the economy does go into a recession at some point, the Fed lowers rates instead of maintaining where they are now, that'll be bullish for gold and silver.
We'll have more with Mike Swanson right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mike Swanson. Mike, what kind of message was sent with the Fed not hiking rates this week?
Well, it's interesting that they didn't hike rates. That was widely anticipated. Different Fed officials told the Wall Street Journal and other publications that way ahead of time that they're going to pause. The bank stocks crashed in March. The Fed had to step in, or the Treasuries had to step in and do a backstop of all the regional banks, which is amazing. There's a worry that if they raise rates more, it's going to cause even more blow-ups. So they wanted to pause and see, you know, if things are, you know, okay, let the economy and the markets digest the rate hikes already done. The problem, though, that we face is the Fed, even though the interest rates have impacted these banks, they're not really, it's not really a restrictive policy, because the rate of inflation is so high. And that's why the economy, you know, that's why the one reason the market's been able to rally is we don't really have high interest rates, despite the fact that they're up 5%. Well, look at a historical, you know, chart of interest rates going back 100 years, and 5% yields are really normal. What was abnormal was taking them down to zero after 2009, and keeping them below that level. That's what's caused massive distortions, you know, made the stock market go up, made things like Bitcoin seem to make sense to people when there's no return on your money when you, you know, lend it out, then you know, the whole financial system gets distorted. So we went through a decade of that. 2020 came, they lowered rates to zero again, did quantitative easing, another bubble time period, rise of the Robin Hood traders. You know, just like the internet stock people in the 90s, we had the Robin Hood traders, and they blew themselves up, just like the internet stock traders, for the most part, did too. So all these things repeat, no lessons are learned, and here we are now in 2023, the markets are rallying, everyone is happy, but they don't want to talk about high valuations. They don't want to talk about any of the problems in, you know, the gurus, financial media. Instead, they want to tell you that AI is coming. AI is the new innovation that justifies buying and buying more and believe in the tech gurus and just, you know, be happy with what's going on. That's what we're told to do.
Now, does the AI mania remind you a lot of the dot-com mania of the late 90s that led to the 2000 bust?
Well, not necessarily, not exactly, because in the 90s, there are a lot of stocks, internet stocks, you know, internet companies that were appearing. And, I mean, hundreds, maybe 1,000 of these things. So now it's really, this AI boom is really narrowly focused on these five big cap tech stocks, NVIDIA in particular. So it's just a really narrow, small group of stocks. Kind of, you know, they talk about the Nifty 50 in the 1970s, sort of like that. And this appearance of five big cap tech stocks powering everything up. I mean, we've seen this before. This was really the story in 2022. The internals were bad, but, you know, Facebook and a couple of these stocks were doing great, and Facebook blew up. But, you know, Amazon was in the group, and Google, and, you know, that this was going, this happened in the different years and after 2009, too. So it's the same sort of trading pattern seen before. I'll tell you what the AI really makes me think of. These tech gurus out there and CEOs, like, you know, throw Elon Musk in there, they put out these statements that AI is going to kill us and it needs to be controlled, and they're trying to scare us. I think what they're really doing is just distracting us from not looking at the things that they're already doing, which are hurting society. In, you know, look at social media, look at how it destroys the children's emotions, it makes them depressed, rise in suicide among teenagers has happened ever since 2016, and the rise in social media, the misinformation in news, how it divides people, causes people stress the more you use it, and the more you're on the internet. These are awful, awful things that these tech gurus have created, and now they tell us AI is going to kill us. It's just a distraction from what they're already doing. And what AI really reminds me of is when I was like 12 years old, I remember playing with a Ouija board with friends of mine, and it would come out with gibberish. And I think that's what a lot of AI is. You know, there was a case where a lawyer used AI to generate a legal brief, and the judge had to throw it out of court because it was legal gibberish. And I think it's a lot of hype. Sure, it can be useful for people who say you want to write articles and you don't really want to use your brain. You want this thing to spit it out for you and then edit it. So, you know, you can do stuff like that. And news websites are now doing it, and you can see. Go to any news sector. I'll just say the financial media as an example. Look at what's on CNBC. Look what's on CBS MarketWatch. Look at some 20 other financial sites, and the headlines are all now pretty much the same because the content is generated by the same, you know, programs, just tweaks made to it. So that's where we're at.
What do you think is going to go on with crude?
You know, we've had a pullback in crude all year, and I think it's going to stop pulling back. Maybe $60 a barrel is going to be the floor for crude, but I think oil stocks are good buys and investments. At one time, had 20%, close to 20% of my money in them. Unfortunately, I sold last year when stuff faltered in the summer, and then wasn't able to get all the way back in with what I had. That's how difficult it can be to hold and trade when you have these volatile cycles. But I think we're likely to see, you know, a floor put in the crude oil here. And really, you know, the most of the decline was last year. And, you know, we opened this year at $82 a barrel, and now we're trading around right below 70. So it's not like there's been a huge pullback in crude oil here. I think we're now kind of like in a sideways phase overall in it.
Are interest rates, you think, going to go up again the next time the Fed meets?
Well, the Fed fund futures have a 60% chance of another rate hike, and that's it after that. Now, the meeting they had, they talked about two rate hikes. The Fed fund futures aren't, you know, don't have two. They have just a 60% chance of one. So I do think we're at the end of the rate hiking cycle, whether there's one more hike or not. I don't think most investors should really worry about it. However, I think that's this rate hiking cycle. I think there'll be another rate hiking cycle in a couple years in which interest rates will go dramatically higher from where they are now, maybe up to 10% or even higher than that. Like I said, I think we're kind of, when it comes to inflation and rates, experiencing something not seen since the 1970s. And if you look at what happened then, you had volatile interest rate policies where rates would go up to 7%, then back down to 4%, and then back up again. And this happened multiple cycles. So I think that's what we're really in. I don't think rates are ever going to go back below 2%, much less zero, in the rest of our lifetimes.
Mike, anything else?
Not going to go away.
Yeah. Mike, anything else we should be keeping an eye on right now?
No, I don't. You know, I think we're actually in a time when, you know, this summer when the markets are probably going to be, they already are, less volatile. So I think that's going to remain a trend for the next couple months.
Mike, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Oh, great to talk with you.
My guest has been Mike Swanson, editor of WallStreetWindow.com. If you have any questions for Mike or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on Twitter at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.